Happy New Year! Welcome back to the Less Panic, More Peace podcast, where we try to give a little more peace and a little less panic to parents and kids who are dealing with food allergies. Today is a very special episode kicking off 2022 on the right note. On the pod today, we have a CEO of FAIR, which is a very impactful food allergy organization. She was a former U.S. ambassador, served 4 U.S. presidents and 2 governors, an author of a self-help book, orchestrated and the president of the Healthy Weight Commitment Foundation, as she helped reduce 6.4 trillion calories from the American diet, an inspiration to many, and so much more. I'm so excited for this episode today. So without further ado, I introduce to you all Miss Lisa Gable. How are you feeling today?
I am doing just great. And it's so nice to see you this afternoon.
Awesome. So first off, I'm honored that you can sacrifice some of your time and energy to be on the podcast today. Just kind of jumping right into it. Can you tell the audience a little bit about yourself and what you do?
Well, I'm the CEO of FAIR. I've been at FAIR since June of 2018 and was really brought in to utilize my business relationships, both in the United States and overseas, as well as relationships with other philanthropists and organizations, and bring a level of partnership to food allergies so that we could truly use every channel available to make sure that we're educating people and ensuring that they have the right resources they need in order to manage their allergies.
Awesome. So obviously you have accomplished so much in your life and not many have the opportunity and privilege and worth ethic to do so. So I heard you working at the White House at 21, was it?
I started in the Reagan administration when I was 19 years old. I was actually hired and brought on board to talk to students about the privatization of student loans and opportunities for financing for college education, and then went to the Defense Department and moved over to the White House. And so I had the opportunity to be there for Reagan's last 5 years in office, and it was an incredible pleasure and a major point in time in history.
Wow. I commend you for that. That's amazing. Getting a sense of your why, because I know people already kind of know who you are. You're very famous in the food allergy industry. And I would just like to know, as a 16-year-old girl myself, why did you do all of this? What was your reason? What was your motivation?
Well, you know, I've always been interested in solving problems and seeing if there's a problem that exists. I love to try and fix it. And really started my initial interest in the area of national security and military technology. I know that's an unusual place to start and end up where I am today in food allergies, but that's what actually led me through my years at the White House and the Defense Department, and later to Silicon Valley working with Intel Corporation, and was given the opportunity by different CEOs and billionaires and philanthropists and presidents to come on board to help solve problems that other people had not been able to solve, or take an organization to a new level of performance. And it's what gets me energized. You know, I tell people life is a Rubik's Cube, and I just sit there and I'm sitting there churning and churning and churning until I get all the white lined up and all the yellow lined up. And having that opportunity to do that with such a complex area as food allergies has been intriguing, exciting, and something that I've greatly enjoyed.
From what I'm hearing is that you've kind of turned around your career paths in a way, and it's kind of an interesting way of doing it. You kind of went from the White House and serving, you know, U.S. presidents to actually going to food, you know, the food industry, which is a huge industry right now, obviously. And so how did you go from that to food? Can you explain a little bit about that?
When I left the White House, I went to work for Intel Corporation, the people who make computer chips, the Intel Inside program, and I ended up having my own company, really helping organizations move from business to business to business to consumer sales. You're not old enough to remember, but there was a period in time when, you know, we weren't selling personal computers and PDAs to the individual. We were actually selling into other companies. And so that's where I picked up my consumer experience. But the one thing I learned in the Valley is how to apply manufacturing principles to solving problems. And I basically have developed an entire career solving problems in government, business, and philanthropy through using those manufacturing processes. The processes like just-in-time manufacturing, quality improvement processes, really understanding how to visualize the future, move an organization to that next point. And so if you look at the common thread, I've always worked with manufacturers. I worked with high tech, then I worked with the auto industry. I've worked with the food and beverage industry, now also working with the pharmaceutical companies. And there's a common language that each and every one of those use, which is that they have to decrease price and they have to increase output simultaneously. They have to continue to innovate all the time because the competition is right around the corner, and deliver the best resource to the consumer. In the area of food allergies, it's making sure that we have therapies and diagnostics that are affordable, available, and actually easy to use for individuals with food allergies. And so that's been an area that we've focused on while I've been at FAIR.
That's great. So I kind of want to highlight what you said about kind of moving around. You've kind of always been in that manufacturing industry. Like, you're always doing something, right, to reinvate yourself. You know, my dad has always taught me that. He worked at Pfizer for 20 years, and now, you know, he wrote books and he's doing a startup now. So it's always pivoting. And I feel like that's what I'm learning from you right now. You're always pivoting your career because the world is changing. The world is pivoting.
The world is pivoting, but what you're doing is you're gaining experience and skill sets and opportunities to take those skill sets and apply them in different industries. And I think for you and your colleagues and your peer group, the opportunities are going to be immense for you all. Because if we look at food alone, we now have Google is involved in food production. Who knew? Or in food conversations and food tech. You have the agricultural industry that's involved in food. Pharmaceutical industry is dealing with biologics. And we also have prevention products, products that are the proteins that are fed to babies. We have the food and beverage industry. So you all are going to be in a place where you're learning a particular skill set. You're going to become best of class in that particular skill. But what's happening is all of those activities are starting to merge into one. And so it will be an opportunity for you all to move from industry to industry based on the knowledge and the skills that you bring to common problems that are bridging between those different industries.
Yeah, that's really wise. So kind of speaking, going off of the food industry and everything, can you explain to the audience what the healthy weight commitment is? I think that's so fascinating.
Sure. I was recruited by 16 food and beverage CEOs, led by Indra Nooyi. Indra was the CEO and chairman of the board of PepsiCo, and she was chairman of the board. We also had the CEOs of Kellogg and Campbell's Soup, as well as General Mills, Nestle, et cetera, 16 companies. And we made a commitment to the White House, the Michelle Obama Let's Move campaign, as well as the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, which is the largest private foundation that deals with food and obesity issues, that we would reformulate products. And what we did is we all worked together with the public health industry and with the White House to identify how we were going to measure our success. And what we recognized is that the common denominator across every food is calories. And if you reduce calories, you actually will reduce sugars and fats. And so we made a commitment to reformulate or change the recipes of products across these 16 companies. Now, these 16 companies were responsible for 35% of the food sold in America. So that's a pretty significant change that was made. And so over a five-year period of time, we changed all the products across the portfolios except one. And through that process, we reduced 6.4 trillion calories from the marketplace. And you see it today. If you take a look at your ice cream options alone, that came out of my commitment. So when you're looking at things like slow churn ice cream, which is 150 calories versus maybe at Ben and Jerry's, it's going to be, you know, more along the lines of 200 to 400 calories a serving. When you look at a product like Halo, that's just a few calories a serving, or those individual packs, you know, that's where you start seeing when people say, well, I don't get it. How did it happen? That's how it happened, which is that we were able to bring in new technologies, new sweeteners, new ways of making the food so that it cost the amount that the consumer could afford, but it had a lower calorie count.
That's truly fascinating. So when you look at these, you're like, oh, wow, I did that. You know, isn't it such a surreal moment? That's awesome.
Yeah, and I also happen to know how many calories are in every food that I eat, which is really something that no one should ever have to think about, especially when you go into Starbucks. It's like, well, I really wanted the peppermint mint patty, you know, December coffee, but no, I'm not eating it.
I know. It can be a good thing and a bad thing at the same time.
Yes, it could.
Awesome. So people love hearing stories. I feel like a lot of people relate to stories. You know, it's a podcast. So it's not really visual. It's just listening. And I love listening to stories, you know, from your grandparents and parents who kind of pass on that wisdom. And there's always a moral to it. So is there any from your entire experience working with FAIR, being the CEO of FAIR, do you have a story that you would like to share that really influenced you, impacted you, and that can kind of gain a little bit of kind of sympathy for food allergies?
Well, I think for all of us that we've been impacted by each and every story that you all tell us. And so, you know, when we wake up in the morning, we think about your stories. And so we think about when Talia Day's son ended up in the ICU after accidentally eating a food off of the wrong table at summer camp. We think about Hillary Carter's son who ended up in the ICU because a food that they'd eaten his entire life that was allergen free happened to have had a packaging snafu and something was in it that actually did trigger an allergic reaction. We have the stories of each and every TAG member who are now applying to college and applying for fellowships. And and for me personally, when members of the TAG are applying to college, you know that I write letters of recommendation if requested. And I've now done it for the last 4 years. And so I've been doing it for people that have made their way through college and are going to graduate school. And so what's inspiring is watching you all take the reins of what happens next, because this is going to be a multi-year process. We're going to see some very significant changes in the next 5 years through our prevention work with Ruchi Gupta, through our work with the diagnostic challenge. But at the same time, the people who probably will bring those therapeutics to market that are underway right now, that are going through their initial clinical trials, is all of you. And so whatever I can do to help you find your path forward to be a participant in that process, that's what I love. I mean, it's each of you, it's your personal stories that I love, and recognizing the impact of this disease on people that we've come to care a great deal about, like the Silvera family.
Yes, I was just about to mention that. Thomas Silvera was on my podcast, and it was one of my favorite podcasts because he was just so real, you know, and he really shared his story, and it made people feel, people who don't have allergies, my friends were coming up to me and were like, I can't believe that this young boy died because of food allergies. I'm like, yeah, this is an invisible disease and people should pay more attention to it. People should sympathize more with it, but we can't really ask them to do that. They just have to educate themselves on their own. And I feel like that's what we're doing right now. And we're building a community, which is what you're saying, which is amazing. And that's what it is. You know, we're making connections and it's unity, which I love.
It is. And, you know, I mean, you know, when we were able to have the global summit, and we'll have one again next year, you know, watching the bonding, the relationships that develop between members of the teen advisory group, watching donors' children who may not, or other children who may not have been to an event before, all of a sudden meeting you guys for the first time. I mean, it's so wonderful to see the relationships that you all have, the passion you have, and the projects on which you're working together. I mean, you're making huge impact. And I know for someone like Thomas, who suffered truly, he and Dina, the most horrific tragedy that anyone could suffer, the strength of that family, the spirituality and the hope and belief that they have, the way that they've structured their life, and the manner in which they give back, the way in which Thomas has pursued his undergraduate degree and now graduate degree that he just completed. You know, it speaks to a level of character which is unique and a strength that's very unique. And so, you know, that's what I've loved about being in this community.
It's the power that we hold, which is great. So kind of moving towards that core of the podcast, which is less panic, more peace. I know there's a lot of anxiety. There's a lot of stress. There is just so much, especially in the midst of this pandemic, there's so much uncertainty. So how do you suggest that parents can reduce that stress level that they have with their child and that anxiety that they have from parents and kids?
Yeah, I mean, you know, a lot of it's education and empowerment. And again, as we've talked about, the partnerships and relationships work together, because providing that unified front, bringing that message forward together, backing each other up when you need to, but also moving forward. And, you know, it's difficult for your parents as you all get older to feel confident and comfortable that you're going to be safe when you're not near them. And we've seen enough, you know, inadvertent accidents that have happened. So there's a reason for that fear. But at the same time, there's a great deal of hope on the horizon. And I think that is one thing that that we really are seeing now. When I walked into the space, there were no therapies. And so that was almost 4 years ago. And then we saw Palforzi approved as the first therapy in this area. But now what we're seeing is, you know, we are working on a daily basis with a core group of 9 companies that we call the Industry Advisory Council, pharmaceutical and biotech companies. And all of the products and the different innovations that they're working on, you know, you've got, there are actually a number of different products that, you know, one of them could be a huge game changer. And so that's something that's new and different. There is not only hope on the horizon, we can actually see what that hope is. We can see how it's manifesting itself through these trials. And so, you know, holding on to that and recognizing that, that there are people out there to support you at FAIR, as well as all the other food allergy groups in the peer community. But simultaneously, just remembering how far we've come. And during the last 4 years, this community, this industry has come a very, very long ways.
I know, it truly gives hope to everybody. It really makes me smile because it's, you start with nothing, right? And then you build something and connect with people and you get to the top, or you get to the goal where you want to be. And when you're talking about solutions, do you mean like immunology, stuff like that? Or
I mean, therapies, diagnostics, prevention products, those are all things that didn't really exist a number of years ago. And so there are really a number of new opportunities. I've been in the food as medicine space now going back since 2009, and participating in those conversations, which I do on a fairly frequent basis around the world right now on Zoom. You know, there's so many innovations. I've been talking to companies that are doing just-in-time meal delivery, and they're basically personalizing the food in order to adapt it to the medical needs of the individual. Well, once you can do that at scale, and once you can do it at a price point that's affordable, that's a game changer, because it's not only people with food allergies who have dietary requirements for staying healthy. You know, there are people with diabetes, there are people with heart conditions, individuals with cancer. And so where we're seeing that cross collaboration, where people are looking at how do we very quickly ramp up a process where we can provide you with a tasty, affordable meal that's going to be the best thing for your health profile, that's incredible. That's game changing. So you all are really entering into this at an amazing time.
Yes, you're right. I feel like we talk a lot about the physical aspects of food allergies, but not really the mental side. And I would love to speak with you on your take on the mental health of people with food allergies. I've spoken to probably 20 plus teenagers on Zoom like last summer, because I'm conducting a study about mental health and how that affects food allergies. And I was just curious, you know, the neurology behind it. And so what is your take? Have you seen a lot of people who have suffered from depression, you know, a lot of these disorders because of the root of food allergies?
You know, we are seeing people who are very anxious, and we see the statistics that are collected through the FAIR Clinical Network and the work that we do, the work that Ruchi and others do, which do look at the stresses for both the individual with food allergies, as well as the parents and the family members of those individuals. And I know that it's a very stressful process, and that it can be frightening, and that, you know, just that lack of certainty that someone in a place that you've gone to. And I know that was made worse during COVID. We did hear stories about people, you know, having deliveries from their favorite restaurant, but because of the internal changes within that restaurant, they weren't as careful as they used to be. They didn't have the same processes in place. So I think, you know, both within food allergies, but also, you know, I've been doing 2/3 of this job during the pandemic, is there's heightened anxiety about a lot of things. And so it's something that we do monitor. And again, I believe that that's also why it's so important for you all to have these relationships, because in any situation, finding people like yourself, no matter what defines who you are, no matter what challenge you have in life, finding others who have that same challenge and being able to support each other has demonstrated to be one of the most critical elements of getting people to a better place in their health and wellness.
Yes, for sure. Do you think that COVID, just your opinion, do you think that COVID actually increased their mental health a lot, or it kind of just made it worse?
Well, it's for different reasons. I mean, I think that a lot of people nationwide and globally are suffering from you know, some significant mental health issues through COVID, where it's a period of great uncertainty. It's a period where you stop and start a lot. I give an analogy, which is I say sometimes I feel like we're standing in a pool and I've got one foot on the concrete, one foot, you know, in the water. And I'm like, are we diving in? Are we not diving in? You know, it's a period of anxiety because you're not with your friends. And so I do worry. I've got my own daughter who's 23 years old. She graduated from college. She's a school teacher. But that process of, you know, in her case, other teachers all of a sudden, you know, being tested positive for COVID. So they're taking on someone else's workload, being worried about the children that they take care of. It is a period of high anxiety. And I think one of the messages I keep giving people, and, you know, I've published quite a bit, is the need to keep moving forward. And that is, I think, the most important thing. You can't give up. You keep moving forward. And by the process of moving forward, controlling what you can control, letting go of that which you can't control, but continuing to put one foot in front of the other is really the only way to survive. And as you do that, you empower yourself, you gain power, and you gain a greater stability, and you gain a recognition that you can manage these things. But this is a difficult time.
Yeah, just keep walking forward, keep moving forward is great advice. So I'd love to take a little intermission, and I do this segment. It's called Fast Five Questions. And it's kind of similar to 73 Questions on Vogue or Ellen's Burning Questions. I'm not sure if you're familiar with them. But it's just basically, it's just five simple questions, and I've done it with all my guests, and I'm just gonna, you can just answer as fast as you can. And I time it, and there's like this, it's a little fun game to get people to know a little bit about quick questions that don't really take up much time, but they're really informative. So are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. Let me time it. All right. Let's see. All right. What is your go-to fast food restaurant or takeout place that is allergy-free?
Dependably allergy-free?
Yes, like top eight allergen.
Oh, goodness. Fast food restaurant.
Yeah, Chick-fil-A.
You know, Chick-fil-A is probably my go-to, but I also know that there's some issues with Chick-fil-A and the oil changes. So I'm sitting here. There, McDonald's used to be another one, but McDonald's has been not as great lately.
Yeah. Okay, great. Any great food allergy resources that you're excited to share, obviously, besides FAIR?
Well, I'm just excited about the work that Emily Brown is doing and the work that they're doing with food banks and making sure that allergen-free foods are available. That's something that all of us have been helping with on a personal level and also on a business level. But I think it's truly impactful, making sure that all people, no matter what their wealth is, can have access to safe and affordable and tasty foods.
Awesome. What is one word to describe allergies to someone who doesn't have any?
To describe allergies to someone who doesn't have it?
Yes.
Risk.
Risk. Three essentials before leaving the house.
Well, make sure that you've got your epinephrine auto injector with you. Make sure that you've got numbers available where if something goes wrong, people know who they're supposed to call. And just be really diligent.
Yes. And then lastly, what is the step-by-step procedure during an allergic reaction?
Well, you want to take your epi immediately, call 911 and get yourself to the emergency room.
Awesome. 1 minute and 30 seconds. You survived.
Well, good. I'm so glad. Just the only one I don't know is I'm sitting here deciding who's the most dependable fast food restaurant.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's a hard one. A lot of people say Chick-fil-A, but obviously that there is like peanut oil. It's a hard question. But yes. Okay. So you have obviously a lot of information. So my listeners are basically kids and parents with food allergies. And some of my audience is actually people who don't have any at all, which is great because you don't want to only advocate to people who already know what food allergies are and already have allergies. You want to advocate to people who don't know at all. So what do you think is very useful to think about? You know, if you were, for example, a new parent who doesn't know anything about food allergies, what do you think, as a CEO of FAIR, what is one key tip advice that you would give them?
Well, what we're telling is that you need to train your baby's immune system by feeding them the allergens early and often. And what we hope to prove is a hypothesis that Ruchi is working on, which is pulls out of the LEAP study. The LEAP study showed if you feed peanut to babies early and often, starting between 4 and 6 months old for the first 2 years of life, it really decreases their chance of getting a food allergy. And so through the work that we're doing with prevention and the research that we're doing, we hope that we can show that by training the immune system against all allergens or with all allergens, that will help really see a drop in food allergies.
That's great. Kind of moving into that manufacturing facility area, I know there's a lot of discourse, conversation, controversy about, if you will, about labeling and getting that going and improving. I know I've spoken to so many teenagers who are impacted by mental health because of food allergies, and they're saying it's labeling, it's the manufacturing, it's the tiny font. I know my sister had an allergic reaction just a few months ago because my mom skipped over the labeling and she didn't see it properly. And then she went into an anaphylactic reaction and we had to go to the hospital and take the EpiPen. So, and I know a lot of different stories about people who have to deal with that. So what is your take on the manufacturing?
Yeah. So I've worked with the food and beverage companies. It's an area that I've really focused on while I've been at FAIR because it's where I can add the greatest value. There are 40 different manufacturing labels in market right now. We have been working both with the FDA, the other food allergy groups, and also with the food manufacturers to try and standardize that labeling, again, based on some great work and research that Ruchi did. And so the conversations are around transparency, we believe, and have had the conversations with manufacturers that transparency means that you have proper labeling with food allergies and that you have systematic labeling that people can understand. Where we're seeing the greatest opportunity is that on the digital platforms where people can basically scan, that's where you're going to see the ability for us to change that information most quickly. We've been asking the manufacturers that when they do the change for sesame, that they go ahead and standardize on one label. But our ability to get that standardization, one of the things we're doing at FAIR is we're working with all the different companies that do the back end for those 70,000 SKUs or however many there are. And so we're have one staff person who's an expert in the field. He's been in this world for 40 years and very well respected in the food and beverage world, has been working on a very systematic basis on this. And so it requires a focus. It requires an understanding of what the manufacturers are doing. And we are slowly, slowly standardizing on the back end.
Wow, that takes a lot of determination. I know when I was speaking with the teenagers on Zoom for like 50 minutes each, I just asked them, I was like, what do you think about Maketane? Because there's a lot of, some people are like, oh, it gives a little uncertainty. I don't know. Does it contain it? Does it not contain it? What is your take on Maketane?
Well, the issue is when we did the research 10 years ago, and then the research was done again 2 years ago, and the research showed that everybody on both times we've done the research, that their preferred term is May Contains, but they want it to be May Contains the specific thing. They don't want it to be May Contains tree nut. They want it to be May Contains cashew, May Contains almond. But until we get the industry to standardize on one label and educate the marketplace as to what that label means, it will always be confusing. Exactly. Because what's going on right now is you're looking at May Contains and it's not based on a standard definition. Once you have a standard definition and it's understood as the definition that is going to be consistent across every single manufacturing platform, you're going to trust it more. But right now you don't have that. And so that's what we're working on.
Yes. I mean, for me, when I look at Maketane, I always am uncertain, but at the same time, I look at it and my peanut allergy, for one, isn't as severe. I mean, my almond allergy is not as severe as my, you know, peanut allergy, and my sister's tree nut is more severe than her peanut. So it's like always very confusing. So being really specific about it is, I feel like, would be beneficial as a teenager with food allergies because sorry, continue.
The companies need to agree on one consistent label, and then they need to educate the marketplace, and they need to say, this is what it means. It's always going to mean this. It doesn't matter if you get it from Kellogg, if you get it from Kroger's, where you get it, Walmart, it always means the same.
Yes, exactly. So moving on to leadership, I want to talk a little bit about that because you you've been doing so many things and people demand so much from, you know, the decisions that you have to make, you know, people demand so much of you from you, as, you know, running businesses, organizations. What is an important leadership lesson that you can give food allergy advocates, teenagers who want to make a difference in the world like you?
One, you have to be responsive. So when people reach out to you, you need to respond. And that's one thing that I've always seen good leaders do. And I call it, you know, walking the floors, whether they work in a company or whether they're in an organization, you have to really talk to everybody. You can't just stay remote in your own little island, in your own little space with your own little group of friends. But probably the most important thing that I've learned, and I learned this working at the State Department, I've learned it working in business and industry, is you need to look at a problem from someone else's point of view. You know what your point of view is. You know how you would perceive this problem based on your own point of view, but you're not going to be able to move the market. You're not going to be able to change other people's opinions unless you can articulate the solution in the way in which they speak. So if you take the time to say, I'm going to look at this problem from the point of view of that other person and the challenges that they're facing, and then I'm going to come back to that person and I'm going to articulate a way forward, and I'm using language that they're familiar with, I'm going to use the language that they use on a daily basis, that is the most successful way to solve a problem.
Wow. Yeah. Just working backwards in a way, right? That has to be
The other person. I mean, we talk at people. We need to listen to what they're saying and put it within perspective. And I think if we do so, that decreases our negative reaction and allows us to find a way to link arms together.
Yeah. So when working at the White House, how receptive were the members of Congress when, you know, if you spoke to them about the needs of the food allergy community, like, do politicians really care?
We do. You know, we have a fair with the Sesame, with the Faster Act. We had the opportunity to get almost 100 co-sponsors, Democrats and Republicans. And in fact, when FASTER was passed, we only had 11 people out of 435 vote against it. That's phenomenal.
Wow.
And so they do care a lot about the issue. And that's why we've had great reception with the Food Allergy Research Caucus, which is a bipartisan caucus to focus on getting more money for food allergy research and also removing barriers to the research. And what I love about the caucus is that our co-chairs are completely, all four of them are at different ends of the spectrum, even the Republicans and the Democrats. The one Democrat's super, super progressive, another Democrat's more moderate. On the Republican side, you've got, you know, one sort of moderate Republican, you've got one Tea Party Republican. So we have some strong backing in Congress now. And that's thanks to the good work that everybody's done as advocates.
That's great. You're doing amazing work. Why don't you run for president already? Like,
yeah, we'll let other people do that.
Okay, well, that's great. Thank you so much. You have anything else to add? You know, I really want to actually speak about your book, The Turnaround. You published it 2021, correct?
It did, October of 2021. And we got on the Wall Street Journal USA Today bestseller list. So I was very happy about that.
Congratulations.
Thank you. But just, you know, one of the things I wanted to do in the book is use storytelling to get people to understand that they're not alone. You know, all of us, I think sometimes when you're in the middle of a challenge, you just feel like you're by yourself and that you're the only person that's faced it. And so one thing that the book focuses on is really giving people an opportunity to understand how people have faced similar challenges and that there are ways that you can overcome them. And, you know, that attitude, my dad, I have a quote from my father who died while I was at FAIR. And, you know, he said, challenge your crisis. And what he points out is that every stumbling block he's ever had ended up being his greatest opportunity. And that's, when you look at it from that perspective, then the world is really got a bit shinier.
Yeah, I totally concur. When you fail, I feel like you're more able to kind of pick yourself back up. You know, you're hitting a speed bump in the road, but that speed bump is lifting you up a little bit and then letting you go and surpass.
Yeah, I mean, another way to look at it is another friend of mine says that when God closes one door, he opens another door, but the hallway is horrible. and so you have to go through the hallway. And sometimes I do think that God you know, I think in my own case, sometimes doors have to be shut because they're really not the right door for me to be going through. And what I'm not seeing is that there's the opportunity, this other door that's going to open up, because, and that one's actually going to be the thing that gives me so much more. And I think that's the hardest thing until you're older to understand. But when I reflect back through, you know, I've been working almost 40 years now. And when I look back through my life, all of those moments, I thought, gee whiz, if I'd kept going that path, I would never have gotten to where I am today. And so, you know, there is a plan, there is a purpose for our lives. We don't always have to know what it is. It's just, we have to be willing to look for the opportunity to go to the next level.
For sure. I always carry this quote around me, with me. It's, you know, every problem is an opportunity in disguise. And I just think about that all the time. I deal with that bump in the road or that messy, disgusting hallway that we do not want to walk through, but kind of the light at the end of the tunnel. And right now, you're sharing so much wisdom and so much insight to parents and kids who are dealing with food allergies. I want to thank you so much for the work that you have been doing and for being on this podcast. Is there anything else you would like to share before
It's just that I'm very honored to do it with you. And I'm very pleased to see how you're doing this podcast and how successful it is. So congratulations.
Thank you so much. And thank you all for listening to Less Panic, More Peace, new episodes every 2 weeks. Peace out.